Chris Doyle is without a doubt one of the most legendary BMX riders on the planet, especially so in the trail world. Chris has had a long career in BMX that spanned two decades, and I wanted to know what got him there, but also how he was able to move from being a professional BMX rider to then finding a new career, which happened to be in real estate. You know, of course, while still maintaining his riding lifestyle. Chris is one of my all-time favorite riders, so it was amazing to have the opportunity to speak with him, and I'm excited for you to listen to this episode. You're in the Backbone Zone. Chris Doyle, thanks for coming on the show, man. It's a big honor. And, you know, I guess just to start with, I like to pay all my guests compliments, but, you know, you have been one of the biggest influences in my riding lifetime, to be honest. I grew up, you know, I don't know how old we are, age gap, but I had a DK, and it was because you were riding with Robbie Miranda and things like that at the time. And, you know, it's been, I grew up just riding jumps. I had like the Fox videos, and I used to watch everything that you used to do. So it's really an honor to have you on the show, man. Appreciate it a lot.
Dude, my pleasure. Thank you for the compliments. it's been a wild ride, you know, when I was a pro, but I certainly appreciate that.
No worries, man. I mean, we've, I guess, hung out a little bit before when you came to the ACT Jam, you know, a few years ago. Not too much, but it's something I've always wanted to have you on the show, just because you've been, in my eyes, someone who has maintained this really high level of professionalism in BMX, while still somehow being able to also be like a trail in the trail community, you know? So if just to kind of set it up a little bit further, like if you look at the way that riders are now, it seems like there's a very stark contrast between people who make BMX their career and then those who make BMX more of the lifestyle. And you have always been the person who I think is very professional and can do really well at contests, but then also is out riding your bike, going to the trails and things like that. What do you think? It's not really a question, but it's more just, what do you think led you to that? And what do you think's different about BMX now?
It's hard for me to speak on where BMX is now, because I'm just a fan anymore. I just, from the outside looking in, I don't know what it takes to be a professional, and how difficult that must be with like social media and things like that. Because this is gonna really put a date on me, but I was pro for over 20 years, and my first pro contract looked a lot different than my last pro contract, because my first pro contract was all about just like, make sure you're running the products, make sure you have the stickers, make sure you're wearing the shoes, make sure you're wearing the shirts, make sure you're going to the contest. It didn't necessarily care if there were certain incentives if you did well, like if you got a top three at a big contest, you were going to get more money. But like my last contracts were all about like social media presence and a certain number of likes. If you get this many views, if you have the product in the right place, if you have the product in a video, it's like, whoa, it was so different. I'm very lucky that I got to, you know, stick around long enough to see the contrast, but I can't imagine what pro contracts look like now compared to what they look like when I was doing it. But you'd mentioned about being like well-rounded and being, you know, not only like a contest rider, but also being, you know, present at the trails, present at the jams. That was just me being a total BMX nerd. And wanting to like embrace it all. Like I just wanted to be a part of anything that was going on, whether that was a big contest, whether that was a jam, whether that was the trails. And a lot of my friends, when they started to make it, they all moved out west because like they made it being contest riders. I moved to Pennsylvania from North Carolina because I wanted to be a trail guy. I grew up on 1201. I grew up on Anthem. I grew up all the Stu Johnson and Mike Tagg and FBM videos. So that's like the lifestyle I wanted to live, but I didn't want to live like a dirt ball. So I knew that contests were going to provide me a cushy lifestyle. So I could live well and kind of live both worlds. And that just, I think that brought me a lot of notoriety in the contest world and in the trail world and like the hardcore world. And then it just like, just through the relationships I built with both, it just allowed me to have kind of the best of both worlds. I got to go on Road Fools, but I got to go to the X Games too. I got to, and then, you know, having a relationship with guys like Chris Bennett. He's like, dude, you want to ride for Square One? Yeah, I'll ride for Square One. So I think guys like me and like Mikey Aiken and Biz and a few other guys, like we just kind of had that figured out. Like, okay, I'm going to go over here and make some money. And we were never too like proud to say like, yeah, I'm just at this contest to make a couple bucks. Then I'm going back to the Posh Jam because that's happening. And whereas a lot of the bigger contest dudes weren't really doing that. I remember Nastasio showed up at the Nom Jam. Do you remember the Nom Trails?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they got dozed quite a bit. I had all the really early Caddy Woods videos, and I think there was a little bit of Nom from before. Like it must have been like footage from after the fact. But yeah, Nom.
Nom was like the precursor to Caddy. It was like the same. All the young Nom locals became the guys that started Caddy. But I remember Nastasio showed up at like a Nom jam and everyone's like, oh my God, like the superstars here. Yeah. So he would always drop in on like events like that every once in a while. But regardless, I feel like I'm getting off topic and I tend to get kind of wordy and I chat a lot. So if you need to cut me off.
No, mate. But
that was just kind of like my journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
As in terms of like what pros are doing now and like what, you know, professionalism looks like now, it's really hard for me to say. I mean, I have my favorites, of course, and my favorites do well in the comps. They do well with their social medias. They go on the trips. They film video parts. It's hard not to love guys like Kevin Peraza and Dennis Henderson just because it looks like you could put anything in front of them. And they're gonna kill it. They're gonna be great at it. So I mean, if you're, you know, if you want to be an up and coming pro, like just watch what those guys are doing because that's it.
For sure, I've actually been saying that to a few people, like Dennis. I don't see this is a. I guess this is kind of going to be a bit of a long winded thing, but in Australia, we don't really have the typical pro, you know, like I'm a sponsored rider. I ride for, you know, a few brands, but I've never seen a contract in my life, you know, and I'm also not good enough to make that leap, I guess, that everyone does from Australia. You know, like if you're talking about, say, Jason Watts, you know, he had to essentially move to, well, he does huge stints in America to kind of hold his place in that pro rankings. I think it's really interesting to go from like being sponsored to then making BMX like your career path, you know, or moving to that like, oh, I've got to start making money here because otherwise I'm not going to be sponsored for very long or I'm not going to be able to complete this for very long. But to get back to what I was saying, you know, Dennis, in my eyes now, is just the ultimate professional that people should model their BMX career on. Like he obviously is the best rider in the universe. Like he's an amazing rider, but he's also contributing he's on YouTube doing his thing. He's doing his podcast. Like he's rocking up to the jams. It seems like he's just doing it all. It's impressive.
Yeah, which I'm really happy that he has embraced social media for the sake of all of his fans.
Mm.
Because it seemed like for a long time, like he had an Instagram, but it was just for sponsors. Like, you know, like Rockstar wants you doing a certain number of posts per month. So it's like, okay, I'll get an Instagram just to do that. So for a while, his social media outlets were like really lame and kind of boring. Yeah. And there was like big gaps in between posts. But now it's like, I think he's embraced it. He's like, well, this is what I got to do. Like, I can't just be a contest rider. So I got to put out, like keep putting out content. So again, as a fan, I'm happy that he's doing that.
For sure. But like, so for you, is that something you spoke about the early days versus obviously later on in your career, but in the early days, was there a conscious choice to go from being just a bike rider to, you know, that was good at riding to then being like, oh, you know what? I'm going to try and make a bit of a career out of this.
No. It was never, I'm going to kind of repeat myself again. Like, I was just the biggest BMX nerd that there was. And from like the ages of like 13 to like 15, like I just, every video, every magazine was just like, I'd watch every video until I couldn't watch it anymore. Or like I'd read every magazine until like the pages were falling out. So really, I just wanted to be involved and I didn't care, you know, how or why I was involved. I just wanted to be like, you know, in the credits of props, and I wanted to like have clips and props and things like that. So I was really young. I was 16 when I turned pro.
It was all
luck, man. Like I was getting bikes at cost from DK. And that's just because there was a guy from my town. His name is Corey Muth. And Corey Muth,
he's got a sick style.
Like, yeah, one of the best styles of all time, in my opinion. But Corey was a single A pro for DK, and then he went on to Reynolds Racing, and then he realized he wasn't going to make it as a double A pro, so he just dropped it and went to college. But he had maintained a lot of relationships in BMX, and one of those was Steve Buddendeck, and Steve Buddendeck was the marketing director of DK Bicycles. So Steve was in Raleigh, North Carolina, my hometown, for a race, and he came to the trails to shoot photos of Corey. Well, I saw a camera and I'm like, oh man, like I was like a natural like show off. So I was doing all my tricks and everything. And I was riding my yellow S&M Holmes, and Steve he gave me his business card, and he's like, hey, if you ever want a DK, let me know. I can get you a frame at cost. And I took this as an opportunity. I was like, oh, okay. So a few weeks later I called him and I got a DK Legend at for like $100, and that like it was a terrible bike, but to me I was like, oh, I feel like I'm like about to be sponsored. And then unbeknownst to me, Buddendeck had called Corey Muth leading up to the Christmas Classic in 1997, and Steve's like, hey, that kid at the trails was really good, and we've been like hooking him up with cost on bikes. Do you think he'd be good in like a contest setting? And my buddy Corey was just like, yeah, I think he'd do really well. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to call him. And is he going to the Christmas Classic? And I had asked my mom for a plane ticket to go to this contest in Ohio.
Wow.
And so I was going to the Christmas Classic one way or another. And Muth was like, yeah, he's going to the Christmas Classic. You should hook him up. So Buddendeck called me and he's like, hey, if I pay your entry fee, will you wear a DK jersey at the Christmas Classic? And I'm like, what? I was like, yeah, of course I will. And then he goes, okay, well, in the meantime, if you need anything for your bike, just let me know. And I'm like, for cost? He's like, no, just like, if you need anything, if you need like wheels, if you need cranks. I'm just like, I can get anything? He's like, yeah, anything you need. I'm just like, oh my God. So I showed up at my first contest and I had a DK jersey with my name on the back. And I did pretty well. Like I made finals. I got seventh place. And then it was like, okay, you and it was me and Todd Wachowiak.
Yeah.
It's like, you're our dirt jumping team. That's it. And it's like, okay. And then the next month I was on a plane to California, and the rest is history. But like, I was very young. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like this is, I get to live the dream for a little bit. And then it just kind of kept snowballing from there. So I wanted to be pro, but I never really had this vision for how it would go. I knew that there was dudes making a living, but I didn't think I was going to be one of them. Like, because when we got to California, we went to Neil Wood's house, and I'm like, he bought this house by riding BMX.
Yeah,
he had
like
a motorcycle in the garage. I'm like, you can do this? Like, this is insane. Because I didn't make any money. I didn't make any money till I was 17, and my first pro contract was written in pen. I was like, so I was always very naive, and like I always had kind of, it's probably the way I was raised. I was like, this is not gonna last. Like I need to like be smart about this. This is not gonna last. So I like went to university out of high school, and then I was like, I started making like real money. Like at 18, I could make a living riding BMX. The industry was in a much different place too, you have to understand. So I was like, I'm just going to quit going to college and see where this takes me. Cause I had like 2-year contracts. And I was like, but at the end of that 2 years, like every time you got a contract with a, you know, that was like 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever. It's like, well, that's my expiration date. I'll be done by then. And then I'll go to school. And that just continued on for over 20 years.
Wow.
So like, I think that's a really wordy answer to your question, but no, I never really thought like, oh, I'm going to be pro. I'm going to do this for over half my life and really make it like who I am. So
Yeah. Well, I mean, you obviously did a really good job at what you were doing contest wise to continue on for 20 years. And, you know, in between all that, you know, I mean, the Square One video, for example, the like Wide Awake Nightmare, which I know is quite a way after you got signed to DK, but one of the best video parts of all time, you know, but
it's just taking advantage of opportunities that were presented to me.
Yeah.
And like, I would just go to every contest. I would go on every trip. I would film for any video part. I was just, this is what I wanted to do. And it never felt like a job, but, you know, it was, the money came just, I think people really started to take a liking to my professionalism and to what I was doing on the bike and off the bike. And I never had like a hardcore look or a hardcore persona, but I think just being authentic about it just kind of shined through to, I had a little audience, and
for
that's
sure,
what
kind
of kept me around for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, you definitely didn't paint yourself into a corner. And I think that speaks to the type of rider that came out of that late 90s, mid 2000s era, because you were riding, you'd go to Metro Jam and then you'd be filming like a rail or whatever, and then you'd have trail clips. It seems like riding potentially has gone a little bit more narrow minded in a way, but that's what
a lot of that too. Going back to me just being a nerd, I would always like stumble upon other riders that I really liked. I didn't start really riding street until I saw Van Homan do the biggest rail in my town. Cause I'd met him. We were both dirt jumping kids. He got on Schwinn. I was on DK, and I would just see him at the dirt contests. This is before he put out Seek and Destroy.
Yeah, sure.
And they came to, like, him and the Little Devil crew came to my town, and I thought they were there to ride trails. So I met them at the trails. I'd gotten off high school, met them at the trails, and they were super muddy. Couldn't ride the trails. And Van was like, is there any good street around here? I'm like, street? What, what are you talking about? So I took them to the local campus, and when you go to NC State campus, you have to drive through downtown Raleigh. And there was this rail in downtown Raleigh that me and my friends literally would joke about, like, someone should grind. It was so big. Like, someone should grind that. And we'd all laugh. Like, no one would ever do that. And we're driving, and Van was in the car ahead of me, and they see the rail, and he, like, you know, puts his hand over the hood. He's like, pull in there, pull in there. I'm like, is someone going to do this? And I had Derek Adams in my truck, and he's like, oh, yeah, Van will do this real quick. I'm like, what? So Van did, like, the biggest rail in our town in less than, it was probably 3 tries.
Wow.
Like, 28-stair handrail, huge, just, okay, what else can we ride? I'm like, that Holy was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. So I remember seeing that and then calling my friends, like, we should start riding street. You should see what Van can do. They're like, Van, the dirt jumping kid? Like, and cause he had a little part in Anthem. So we thought he was just like a trail guy like us, but turns out he's a gnarly street rider. And then with Van came to our skate park and he could ride ramps. I'm like, oh my God, like, he can ride everything. So Van had, like, a pretty big influence on me. And then I would go to a contest or something, say it was on the West Coast, and it'd be like Adam Baker would be there. And Baker and I rode a lot alike, did a lot of the same tricks, but I was doing double truck drivers. And Baker goes, have you ever done, like, a suicide double truck driver? I'm like, I've never even thought to put my arms out like that. And he's like, watch this. This is a suicide double truck driver. And he's got similar build and he's got this wingspan. I was like, that was the best thing I've ever seen. Yeah. So after the contest, I went home. I'm like, okay, I'm going to start trying this. And, like, I learned sui double trucks. And I was always just taking things from other people that I liked. But it's like, I wanted to ride like Mike Aiken, who didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tried my best to, like, have style like Aiken. I wanted to ride street like Van. I wanted to do things like Baker. Just guys my age that I was like, oh, taking a little bit from everybody and just, you know, things I thought were cool, things that I thought were, that would fit my style.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I do like the BMX because I have that same sort of feeling, you know, like, I can't help but I just enjoy watching street riding, but I know that I can't do it. But then in my mind, I'm like, oh, I want to go and try this, but I don't even have pegs on my bike, you know? And it's the same even with the Olympic type riding. Like, there's some stuff that people do that I'm just like, man, that's the sickest trick, but I know I'm never going to do it. I think that's where maybe Peraza gets just nails. Like, he can do super hard, high level tricks, but makes them look good. But
yeah, even, and your fellow countryman, Logan, he just posted a clip of him doing a 3-whip to invert. And I was like, oh my God, that, it looks so good. Yeah. I would love to do that.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I know he should do that. I feel like he would win contests with that sort of stuff. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so then to, just to keep going on about the career thing a little bit more. Yeah, because, you know, 20 years is a long time, right? You were kind of taking advantage of a situation as a young kid. You started making some money. Then you started making some more money. You were going to places and obviously brands were like, this dude's fucking sick. Like, he's just going everywhere and killing it. But I think everyone in life, regardless of whether you're a BMX rider or not, somewhere around that late 20s era, you know, age, you start thinking, man, I got to start thinking about what I'm doing for the rest of my life. Was there that moment for you in BMX?
Oh, Tyson. that was in the back of my head from a very young age. I mean, even before my late 20s, I'd say like early 20s, I was already thinking about it. And again, it's probably because the way I was raised, I was, you know, from the moment I turned pro, it was like, well, you got to have a backup plan. You got to, like, you know, always be thinking about the future. So, yeah, there was, it was always a thought. And like I said before, anytime I would sign a contract, I'm like, well, I got 2 more years left. And it was scary because, like, I turned pro very young and had a long career, which I was very fortunate. But when I was when everything did come to a halt, when everything did stop, you know, now I'm a guy, I have no college experience. I have no college education. I have no work experience. I've done turndowns for the last 20 years. It was incredibly scary.
Yeah.
And some days it still is. I mean, because I'm not in my current career, I'm not exactly where I want to be just yet, but I'm getting there. But yeah, I mean, it was always in the back of my head.
Yeah. I think for me, I always have had a little bit of a, I don't know if you've ever had this, but the best way I can explain is if you're at a party and, or you're at a social setting and you're kind of, you know, talking to people and just in a social situation and people ask you what you do. And I feel quite ashamed at, and I don't know if it's just in my own head, but like, I feel like all these other people are like, oh, I'm doing this at university, or oh, I've got this job and I work for the government. And then they're like, oh, what do you do? And you're like, oh, I work at a BMX shop. You know, like, I've always had that self-deprecating feeling. And I think,
really?
Yeah. It took me a long time. It actually took me probably until my late 20s, early 30s to be like, oh, actually, if I reframe it to where I've just really enjoyed my life doing what I want to do, that helped me, you know, because I went from being this dude that wasn't doing the career thing that everyone else was doing. But then as I got older, I kind of learned that all these people that were doing the career thing kind of hated the fact that they never did what they pursued, what they loved to do, you know? So it was a bit of a mindset shift. So
I think that's something that goes on your entire life. Because I watched as, I was never like ashamed of it. Which I don't think you should have been ashamed of it either, but yeah. I was like, I started, and this is not like a flex or anything like that.
No.
I started making good money at like, you know, the age of 19, 20, 21 years old. And this is the time period when all my other friends are in university. They're like just fumbling their way through school, or they're fumbling their way through the workforce. And I'm just like, I just bought an Audi. And you know, 2 weeks later, I just bought a house.
Wow.
So they're like, wow, man, you're killing it, man. That's great. Good for you. So I was, most people were like really supportive because it wasn't fun what they were going through.
Totally.
But then when I come to the end of my career as a pro bike rider, now all those people that fumbled through university and fumbled to find their way through the workforce, now they're fine. Like they're doing great. They're like, you know, knee deep in their careers. And I'm like back at the starting line. I'm like, oh, I need to figure things out. And now I have a family. I got to keep a roof over our heads. I got to keep clothes on my kids' backs. Like I felt all the pressure they must have felt, you know, when they were in their 20s. Like I'm feeling that now at the age of 37, 38 years old.
Yeah.
So life has a way of like everything's cyclical, right? Everything comes back around. But I do think though, like you can only, you know, be the hot shot at the jam in your 20s or, you know, when you're young, you know, so all these people that you were ashamed of talking to, like they don't know what it's like to be at a BMX jam and around other people that have the same passion the passion that you have, and to be a part of something like that. You know, there's, I got wasted this weekend. What'd you do? Well, I was riding a bowl with my buddies and everyone was screaming. It was good times. Like, I think life just has a way of coming back around.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. It took a long time to reconcile with that idea, you know, that notion that I'm like, man, why did you think that for so long? I think once I got older and realized that life is, I'm kind of like taking all my good times and just did it in the first half of my life rather than waiting until I retire to then try and, you know, make up for it or something.
The opportunity to travel and to like go to different places and experience different cultures. I don't know if you've gotten to do much of that, but doing that when you're young, I thought was really, really beneficial. Because I don't think you'd appreciate it as much as when you're older. Because my wife and I went to Ireland a few years ago, before my daughter was born. And we met, like, we did all like the cheesy tours, and we were on the buses with other people, and there were so many old folks. They're like, yeah, this was our life's dream to come to Ireland. And they're like 65 years old. Whoa. Like, you worked your whole life. Now you're finally getting to travel. And they're like, they couldn't make it through the walking tour. Their knees were too bad. Like, their bodies were too beat up. It's like, kind of glad I'm doing this now. When I'm young and healthy and I can really embrace it all.
For sure, man. Yeah. Yeah. That would have been a really big unexpected perk. I mean, same goes for me, but yeah, the being able to travel, especially in the lens of riding a bike, it's pretty crazy. You know, because you have that connection with the area straight away just because you're riding, but you're also in a place that's like super foreign. So yeah, it's crazy.
I don't know how you feel about this, but I'm currently living vicariously through Taj.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, he's living the dream right now.
I love what he's doing. What's that?
He's living it right now. Yeah, it's cool.
I just love that. Like, I mean, he was my hero for so long, and he's still like doing like really badass shit. I mean, he's not like doing the Taj downside tail up over a 30-foot set, but he's, I don't know, like, it just seems so cool. Like, sold off all of his belongings, and now he's just like on the road with his bike, doing a blog, like having adventures. I'm like, man, that's really cool. Like, I look forward to his posts every day.
Yeah, it's amazing. So then, yeah, you just said about obviously starting a new career. What was that like, the process of, I guess, winding down or out of your super professional, you know, because I don't want to get, just before you answer, you know, I don't want to get it twisted. Like, you are still one of the most influential BMXers out there. And I actually remember you had something in, it might have been an Albion interview about, you told Chris Bennett that people still want to see him do Supermans, even though, and that's kind of like, I feel like you are that person, you know. It's like when I say you should come back to Act Jam, but it's because even though you're not the top competitive rider at the moment, like you would melt the east coast of Australia down if you came back, because there's so many people that love to see what you do, you know, even if it's just a turndown. But what I'm getting at is, you know, while you're still very deep and still very influential in BMX, what was the process like from shifting from professional bike rider to what your current career path is?
I feel like this is going to be a long answer as
That's
well.
That's cool. I'm good.
It was a lot of pride swallowing.
Okay.
A lot of like swallowing my pride and just sucking it up. I did come out of it with I came out of my pro career with a different mentality than I thought I would have when it was all over. And it's because pretty much my career ended with my cardiac arrest incident.
So
that was in 2018. So I cashed my last check for riding BMX December of 2018.
Wow.
And I was when it was done, I was like, you know what? Like I couldn't have squeezed much more juice out of a pro career. And I was probably pro for 2 years longer than I should have been anyways. So my mentality then became like, I'm just happy to be alive. 'Cause the odds of surviving the cardiac arrest and then making a full recovery were pretty slim, but I did both. So my mentality shifted to like, okay, well, things could have been a lot worse. and I'm happy that I'm still alive. I'll still be able to ride. But now I have to focus on what I'm going to do next. And in 2019, I kind of had myself fooled into thinking that I could do like commentary for a living. And I should back up a little bit. I had built myself a nice little cushion financially to where like I thought I'd be okay for like the next 5 years. I wasn't going to be set for life. But I was like, I'll probably be okay for the next 5 years or so, just with the funds that I've been able to save and the choices that I made. So in 2019, I was like, okay, I'll just do commentary and stuff. But I really wasn't getting the jobs that I wanted, and I wasn't making a lot of money doing it. So it was more just kind of living off my savings account. But I kind of knew that party was going to end. So I was like, I need a career. I need to do something. And I had always planned to go into real estate because, again, I have no college education. I have no like proper work experience, but I did have a lot of friends that in Pittsburgh work in real estate. So I was like, you know, I could probably do okay. Like I think, you know, being personable and being honest, and I think I'm somewhat still smart. I think I can do this. And so in 2020 is when I started working in real estate. And it was like a mortifying experience showing up to training the first day. And I'm sitting around this table and there's all these other people that have had different careers that would way better qualify them to sell real estate. And we're kind of going around the table. Everyone's talking, oh, what did you do? Oh, I worked in pharmaceuticals and wanted to get into this. And you know, there's a guy who's like a property manager, and there's like all these like variety of people. I'm like, well, what did you do? I'm like, it's similar to the shame that you must have felt. I was a pro BMX bike rider for 20 years. And they're like, what's that? Like, what? Yeah. You could probably tell someone that in like California or New York or somewhere, but like in Pittsburgh, they're like, you can make a living doing that? I was like, well, yeah, like some years are pretty good. And they're like, okay. So doing the training, I realized really quick, I was like, I am not cut out for this. I was like trying to participate. I'm answering questions wrong. I felt like everyone was looking at me. Like I felt like self-conscious for the first time in my life. Like I'd eaten shit on ESPN and not even care. You know, I don't care about that. I've eaten shit in front of tons of people, whatever. You don't like it, screw you. But sitting there in the little office around this table with these other people, I'm like, I cannot do this. So we had like an hour for lunch. And I'm like, once we have an hour, like I'm out of here. I am peacing out. These people will never see me again. But I'm like packing up, getting ready to go to lunch. And this woman stops me. Her name's Lisa Giacchino. And Lisa Giacchino is a freaking angel because she stopped me and she's like, hey, I can tell you're kind of confused by all this, but you live in Plum. I'm the Monroeville office manager, and Plum and Monroeville are like really close to each other. She's like, come down Monday morning. I'll show you how to do all this. And I'm like, okay, thank you. And with her, it was just swallowing my pride, asking a ton of questions, and you know, her telling me, she's like, you can do this. Like you'll be great at this. Don't worry about it. Like you got it. If you have any questions, just call me. So the hard part, and I can't speak to what it's like selling real estate in Australia, but I have my license. I'm ready to go. Now I got to get clients. I get my first client, and I'm having a conversation with my client about the process of purchasing their first home. And there's a lot of legalities and there's a lot of paperwork. And I'm just like sitting there. I'm like, man, you're expecting me to help you through the biggest financial decision of your life. You don't know that I was just falling down handrails, you know, for the last 20 years or whatever I was doing. It just seems so like an identity crisis. That's exactly what it felt like. But I did my first deal, and then I got another client, did my second deal. And by my third deal, it was like big numbers. And I'm like, wow. Oh my God. Like it was like insane. Meanwhile, the market was red hot. when I started. So everyone was eager to buy, everyone was eager to sell. But I heard all these horror stories from like successful agents, like, oh man, my first year I sold one house. My first year I sold two houses, and you know, I was working a part-time job for my first 3 years, and I was like, oh, okay. But in the end of my first year, I sold 10 houses.
Oh,
and
damn.
Well, I did, but then again, everyone was motivated to buy and sell. But me thinking, now my self-esteem's back up, and I'm like, I must be awesome at this. Like, I'm just naturally good at this. I'm a natural salesman. And my next year was even better. And I like won a Remax award. And I'm like, man, I'm like the man at this. Like, I'm so good. But now when like, even 2022 was a good year. And then this year hit and the market is like tanking right now.
Yeah, yeah.
In the States anyways. And now it's become like really real. Like now it's, I have to pivot and learn different skills, like how to market myself, how to market my listings. And this year's been a big wake up call in that it's not going to be as easy as I thought it was going to be.
Mm.
So that's what I meant when I said, when I'm still kind of like figuring things out with career and with how to adjust. Cause in my mind, sometimes I still think of myself as being a big deal. Like I'm still pro bike. Like I still think of myself as a pro bike rider, but I'm not, I'm a real estate agent and I'm a father and you know, I ride on the side.
Yeah.
So there's, but yeah, switching from being a pro bike rider to, I think any career, anything that you've done for 20 years that you've even liked, then you have to pivot and go in a different direction. Like it's tough. It's tough emotionally. You have to take some blows to the ego. You have to swallow some pride. And like I said, it felt easy at first, but now it's like, oh man, now it feels a little bit more real. So I think I answered your question probably.
Oh yeah, for sure. It would have probably felt pretty good to have that many experiences with, you know, closing deals, with selling houses for people or for them to buy houses, because that probably would have, you know, you got all the experience. Like you said, someone was only selling one house a year. You sold 10, you got 10 years worth of experience right there in 1 year.
That's true. But like I said, this year's been tough. It's been tough to make sales. It's been a lot harder now than it, because our interest rates are up and I just have so many, I've had some bad luck. I've had like wishy-washy buyers.
Mm.
And then clients are like, yeah, we don't know if we're going to sell right now. I think we're going to hold off, wait for the market to come back. You know, but that's what keeps the job interesting. You're always learning something new. You're always doing something different. No two deals are ever the same.
Yeah. Is it a fierce competition out there? People dropping in for runs and throwing down bangers.
It was like that in the first couple of years. It was just like, all right, we got to throw our best offer at this thing. We got to like go big. Like, let's go big on it. And I had clients putting in offers like 70,000 above list price and not getting it. It's like, we tried our best. Wow. Whatever, we'll pick up the pieces and try again. And there was a lot of times like you're just breaking people's hearts. I helped my neighbor across the street, like this girl that I have known since she was 9 years old. I helped her buy her first house. Wow. And we probably put in offers on 11 different houses.
Crazy.
And like didn't get it. And every time I'd call her, I'm like, sorry, Jessica, we didn't get this one. And she's just bawling on the phone, just crying. I'm sorry. So there was a lot of that.
Yeah, sure. Man, my mom's a real estate agent and she's she said similar sort of stories, pretty crazy last few years. But she lives out regional Queensland and everyone wants to move to the country. So it's like it's still quite good for her. But
no, that's great.
I guess I wanted to, you know, I'm really happy to hear that you've kind of landed on your feet, and it's interesting to hear that you know, you had that help from Lisa. Was it Lisa?
Lisa Giacchino.
Yeah.
She'll probably never see this. But she seriously, like, without her, like, mentoring me through those first couple deals, like, I never would have made it.
Yeah.
But, like, she sat down, she explained everything. She explained all the, like, okay, we use this form for this. We use this form for that. This is, you know, how we use the West Penn multi-list. This is seriously, like, my hero.
Yeah.
You know? Like, in my list of, like, important people in my life, she came in pretty late, but she was very important to
me. Wow, that's awesome. It's, I feel like it kind of speaks to your, and just general BMX riders, you know, probably level of commitment to something. I know that you said you're about to bounce after the training, but, you know, I think that does come across to people, you know, like I've known a lot of BMXers that are serious BMXers and they almost try to, it's not that they fudge their way through life, but it's like the dedication and commitment you need to send yourself over this rail or, you know, down these stairs or something that kind of transfers across. And I think people can see it. There's been a lot of times where I've seen people get jobs that maybe not as qualified for, but like something about them, I don't know.
Yeah. I never asked Lisa, like, if, like, did you see something in me? Yeah. I honestly think she was just doing her job. Like, wow. It's her job to mentor new agents.
Mm.
And I think we live close to each other. So she saw an opportunity to, it was going to be easy for her just to sit down with me and explain everything. But this poor woman, I've called her early in the mornings. I've called her late at night. She always answers the phone.
Yeah.
She always texts me back. And she's like, oh, hey, Chris, how's it going? What do you need? Like, yes. Okay, Lisa, I got this problem. Like, this deal's about to explode. Like, how do I save this? And she'll just, like, calmly explain, okay, you fill out this paperwork. You have this conversation. You tell them this. She's like, okay. So she was like, remember how in the beginning I mentioned Steve Buddendeck?
Yeah.
Like, taking a chance on like an unknown kid is very similar to that, like that mentor type of relationship, which then, you know, of course became a nice friendship and
yeah. Blossomed. With, you know, now you said that you ride your bike sometimes. Has the love of BMX changed at all or even the passion for it?
No, but it has changed. Mm-hmm. And it has taken a while for it to change in that, like, I used to get on my bike and I felt like I had to ride a certain way, especially if I was around other people. Like, these people need to see me at my best, like, because I'm a pro bike rider. I'm selling bikes. They want to see me shred this DK, shred this kink, shred this S&M. Like, so I used to take it maybe kind of, I don't want to say I took it seriously, but I tried to ride a certain way, and I'm only recently like reminding myself, like, I don't need to ride like that. I don't need to like do my hardest stuff every day. Like, I can just go out and enjoy it. It's made it almost more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost makes it more fun that I don't get to do it every day. Like, I've only gotten to ride trails twice this year and it's been an absolute blast. Like, had so much fun. I've been racing a little bit.
Yeah,
my first race back was like, I'm on a gate with seven of my friends and we're all just laughing. Like, and you know, we'd get to the end of the race and we're all like talking about it, like, oh man, you passed me here. You jumped the pro set. Like Mark Patosny and Mike Patosny were on the gate with me. And like, it was so fun. Like, I think I'm going to try to race, this week as well. So I'm just like finding little ways to like keep it fun. And like, I went to the skate park the other day, like not really expecting anything. I was just by myself and like, I jumped one hip. I was like, wow, that felt really good. Like, sometimes things just kind of click back and I'm like, oh, I want to do turn down on that hip. And I'm just completely by myself. I didn't film it. I'm like doing inverts and stuff. And I was like, man, I left the skate park. I was like, man, that felt great. Like, I'd kind of had a rough week. I went riding and I had a blast, and like it like turned everything around. So the love is still there, but it's like a different, it's like the love has kind of evolved.
Maybe
more of a less professional but more passionate affair with it. I don't know if that makes any kind of sense, but
well, it sounds cyclical in the same sort of thing you spoke about before. You know, when you first start writing, you don't really, I mean, of course, you're always looking at becoming, I want to be just like that pro or whatever. But, you know, a lot of it's just for the love of how something feels and you want to do something. And now it sounds very similar to that.
Yeah. And it's always been organic. It's never been for any kind of like financial gain. It's never been for any kind of popularity. It's just because like, this is what I love to do. I love to ride. I loved riding a certain way. If I saw someone else doing something that looked cool, I'd try to emulate it, just because I was a total nerd. I was just like, it was weird. It's because a lot of people could see through it. Like John Paul Rogers always like, man, Doyle's the biggest freaking nerd. Like he would never, I don't know if I ever got a lot of coverage in his magazine when he had it, like when he did BMX Faction.
Yeah.
He always had this weird thing like, oh, he's such a geek. He's such a nerd. I was like, yeah, sorry. But it was always just, it was all organic. And any kind of success that I had was just because of that. That's why when I trip out that like at the beginning of this, when you're like, oh, you know, I love the Fox video, I love this video, it's like, wow, that's crazy. Because I was just, it was 100% just doing it because I love to do it.
Yeah.
Wow. And I think that's true. What they say is, you know, if you truly love something, if you're truly passionate about it, like good things will happen. And the same sort of shit happened with like, I'm not a pro anymore, but I got an S&M in my garage with my name on it. And I'm just like, how does this happen? It's like the weird occurrences. It's all like, sometimes I feel like I just kind of watched my career through someone else's eyes. Like, I can't believe that was me. It's wow. Such a strange thing.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, you definitely should feel proud. And it's kind of hard to maybe explain to you, because you're just you and you're living your own life. But it's like I said before with the whole Chris Bennett thing that you – I just remember there's a quote. I don't know if it's in the Albion interview or whatever, but you had a conversation with Chris Bennett because he was feeling like he was washed up. And you were like, dude, people just want to see you do Supermans. Like,
I've had to remind myself of that conversation because, you know, towards the end of my pro career, you're like, no one wants to see the same shit out of me I've been doing for the last 15 years. But then I'm like, okay, I've watched enough of my friends go through this. Like, I know it's, you know, I know my place. And I felt that at Act Jam when we were there. Was that 2017?
2017, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt that because I got hurt like the second day of that trip. And I remember being there and I'm watching like Jason Watts ride. Like, holy shit. And Logan was there.
Yeah, that's right.
There was a couple like shredders, like shredding that bowl way harder than I could. But anytime I would step away, I would just hear my name getting chanted. I'm like, I am really going to disappoint these people, like, because I'm just going to do the same shit that I've been doing. And it turns out that's like one of my fondest memories now. It's just, I will admit, and I don't want the kids to get too pissed at me, but like, I had a little bit of a buzz going.
Yeah.
And my face was painted, and like, I was like, this could be the most ridiculous, like, fall on my face, eat shit in front of a big crowd of people, or it could be like really cool.
Yeah.
And after like two or three of those Jack and Colas, is like, I'm just going to go for it. And like, I remember Jay Rowe,
TM,
he's like, hey, Doyle, they're not letting up, man. Like, can you just go, like, just do a turndown or something? I'm like, Jay, my foot. Like, I've been hurt since day two. And he's like, just go drop in and just carve around, like, because they're going pretty heavy. And I'm like, all right. And that turns out now that was one of my fondest memories. Did you ever see the clip that I made of me at the ACT Jam, but then it cuts and it's me just vacuuming my my living room with my daughter strapped to my chest?
Oh, I don't know if I have seen that, or maybe I haven't. I can't remember.
I'll send it to you because it's just yeah. like the contrast of lifestyles.
The juxtaposition of, yeah. I know that's the funny thing when you have a kid too. Yeah, man, that was such a time because it was like, I think you said you were hurt, but then all of a sudden you're doing that transfer and, you know, people were losing their minds. It was classic.
And as I'm trying that transfer, I was thinking to myself, like, I bet Watts or Logan could probably tail up this second try. And I am just struggling, pedaling through the bowl, like trying to get it done. But yeah, it was all good fun.
No, it was amazing, man. Yeah, well, I feel like, again, just to go back, you've led such an impactful BMX life, and I'm psyched to hear that it was just came from, I mean, I can tell, but you've just been so authentic the whole time you've been doing it. But I'm really excited to hear that you've found your feet yet again. And if you make real estate anything like your BMX career, you'll be freaking flawless at it. So I'm
excited. I hope so, man. It's a different type of pressure now.
Yeah.
Again, with like kids and family and, you know, mortgages, and like it's a different type of pressure, but I'm thankful for it all, you know, and it is true. Like, you know, after 2018, I say this all the time, like, I'm just happy to still be here, to still be able to ride, to still be able to, like, you know, live what I would consider a good life. I'm not rich. I'm not set for life, but I'm happy. My kids are healthy. And so, you know, things are good.
Yeah, that's perfect, man. Yeah, well, Chris, thanks heaps for coming on the show. I really appreciate you. And
yeah, my pleasure, man.
Yeah, just everything that you've done for BMX, it's been amazing to watch. So, hey,
just happy to be involved, man. Just happy to be here, and you know, have a little audience and
oh, mate, yeah,
yeah, just be a part of it all
for sure.
Oh, awesome. And congrats on the what you guys have going on.
Thanks.
New spot. Yeah.
Yeah. Far out. It's been a long time coming. It's pretty funny, actually, the jumps that you rode. It's kind of just going to be a couple hundred meters up from those jumps that you rode there, but it's going to be properly, I guess they're going to be built as a BMX facility, phase one. So the idea is to try and get it to where there's like a roofed skate park and every line, you know, from beginner through to the sicko jumps. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, it'll be.
Congrats.
Thanks, man.
I was watching the news clip that you guys put up.
yeah. Yeah, I knew that was actually the one day that I didn't put my helmet in the car, and I freaking knew that they want to have some riding. So now we're like, you know, looking like lamos on this little pump track, but it was pretty funny. It's all, you know, like regular news. No, man, it's always awesome. You're doing something silly.
Yeah. Even if you're doing something super cool, like they're not going to like,
that's right.
They're not going to film it right. They're not going to edit it right. It's going to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, man, you got to make it out, even if it can be for a holiday with the kids. Be sick to have you back in Australia for sure.
Man, that'd be a dream. That would honestly be a dream. I'd love it.
Yeah. Awesome, Chris. Well, thanks heaps, dude. Really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
No worries, dude. See you, Chris.